Good evening and welcome to the Week in Review. I'm Paris Schutz. We'll be joined by our Week in Review guests in just a moment, but first some of today's top stories. Illinois' ban on so-called assault weapons is now on hold. A judge in downstate Effingham County approved a temporary restraining order on the new law as several plaintiffs filed lawsuits against it. This particular case was brought by Republican former Attorney General candidate Thomas DeVore. Governor J.B. Pritzker immediately called the ruling, quote, disappointing, saying, quote, I remain confident that the courts will uphold the constitutionality of Illinois' law, which aligns with the eight other states with similar laws and was written in collaboration with lawmakers, advocates, and legal experts. Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office says they are appealing the decision. The Chicago Tribune reports that mayoral candidate Jesus Chuy Garcia is referenced in the sprawling federal investigation against Mike Madigan and ComEd. The Tribune reports that Garcia is the unidentified congressman named in federal court filings in the case. Specifically, the filings allege former House Speaker Madigan engaged in a scheme to appoint an ally of Garcia's to ComEd's board of directors. Garcia denies he was involved and says he hasn't been asked to speak with any federal authorities. ComEd has paid a settlement admitting guilt in the scheme to get jobs and benefits for Madigan associates in exchange for federal legislation. We'll have much more on this in just a bit. Mayoral candidates are spinning their debate performance from last night. Incumbent Lori Lightfoot took the brunt of the attacks from her challengers as the candidates sought to establish their positions on a bevy of issues from public safety to taxes to Soldier Field. The debate was streamed by ABC 7 Chicago and will air on Sunday night in full. And now to our Week in Review panel on the show's 45th anniversary. That is this week. Joining us are John Seidel of the Chicago Sun-Times, Greg Pratt of the Chicago Tribune, Steve Daniels of Crane Chicago Business, and Rick Tellender of the Chicago Sun-Times. Let's get right to it. So first up tonight, Jesus Chuy Garcia is revealed to be the unnamed congressman in ComEd's bribery case. Businessman Willie Wilson says cops should be able to chase suspects like rabbits. All eight candidates slammed Mayor Lori Lightfoot's leadership. Some political pundits calling the incumbent, quote, an underdog as early voting starts this Thursday. John Seidel, let's start with this news about Chuy Garcia. What does it mean that Garcia's name is mentioned in this case?
Well, and hat tip to the Tribune and Greg's colleagues over there for reporting this first. So, that's what it is. He's mentioned in these conversations about the appointment of Juan Ochoa to the ComEd board.
Juan Ochoa, an ally of Garcia's.
And my understanding is that there's an episode within that alleged scheme in which, the effort to put Juan Ochoa on the ComEd board allegedly took a very long time, more than a year. And well into this, there was a reach out from Ochoa to Madigan, which apparently Madigan took to be, Ochoa kind of saying, what's going on here? And he was trying to set up a meeting with himself, Madigan, and Chuy Garcia. Turned out that he was reaching out about something, about a different caucus, a completely different matter altogether. In fact, the feds called it an unrelated matter in their proffer last week. But here's the thing is that Chuy's name could come up during this trial. This trial is set to start March 6th. It's a week after the mayoral election. If there's going to be a runoff and if Chuy is in that runoff, this trial will be going on in the middle of that and probably won't be over by the time the runoff hits.
It's terrible timing for Garcia, yeah. Although Garcia says he's never talked to federal investigators about this. He is not implicated at this point
that we know of in any kind of wrongdoing.
But yeah. Greg Pratt, what do you think the fallout is politically for him?
Well, it's every day that he's talking about Mike Madigan or being asked those questions is a day he's not talking about the things he wants to talk about. So that's a negative for him. And then if you're Mayor Lightfoot and you remember how you came into office last time, which is that a thunderbolt came down from the sky and it...
In the name of the indictment of Ed Burke.
And it incinerated Alderman Burke and charred all of his allies, you start to wonder, is that going to happen again?
Well, let's take a listen to some clips from last night. There was a controversial comment from mayoral candidate Willie Wilson when asked about his policy on police and foot chases. Let's hear what he had to say.
We'll be tough on crime. We'll move all the restriction things from our police officer. Somebody run chase somebody by foot or car, that police officer should be able to chase them down and hunt them down like a rabbit, okay?
Rick Tellender, he's saying the police should just be able to hunt folks down like a rabbit. Do you think he's got to explain his comments here?
That probably wasn't a good metaphor or a simile right there to compare, alleged criminals to animals. But I know he probably won over a lot of police with that, because I know that they feel hamstrung about what they're supposed to do in chase situations. And I know people in Chicago are upset about crime. So maybe that'll resonate. It was a little extreme.
In fact, the FOP has endorsed Willie Wilson in other races. Steve Daniels, did you learn anything last night in this debate that you didn't know before about these candidates or what their plans for the city would be?
No. I think, it was predictable. They went after the incumbent, who's not very popular. And that's the first job for these various candidates, is to make the case that she's not the person to lead the city anymore. Then you make the case that you're the person to do it. So I think that second part hasn't really happened yet and didn't happen in that debate very effectively, but the case against her is proceeding.
And indeed, she took the brunt of the attacks that happened last night, although she turned around and threw some fire at Chuy Garcia, Greg Pratt. Did you learn anything more about how they all differ on public safety, for example?
Not really. I mean, they're all trying to say more or less the same thing. The only person, which is more police and constitutional policing. But what you do have is Brandon Johnson saying, "I'm going to be different, and we're doing too much policing," which is a little bit against the grain, but it is different. But aside from that, they're all trying to avoid saying something too controversial, while also trying to stand out, which is a strategy for blandness. You don't necessarily see anybody breaking out, and it's partly because they're all trying to say, the mayor's bad and I'm good, and good is good.
Other than agreeing that the superintendent, David Brown, needs to go, they all agree on that.
Except for Mayor Lightfoot.
Except for Mayor Lightfoot.
John Seidel, we mentioned Chuy Garcia and this issue with Madigan. The mayor also brought up his ties to Sam Bankman-Fried, the disgraced crypto guy that had spent a lot of money in a PAC that supported Congressman Garcia. Do you think these kinds of attacks would have resonance and hurt Garcia?
I think they could, and that's why they're being lobbed his way. And I think there are legitimate things to ask about his ties to these individuals. I don't know. I mean, Greg's right. There was a thunderbolt 4 years ago. That was honestly just having experienced that in January 2019, what I was thinking about during the debate last night. There's really nothing that seems to be rocking this race, at least the way that it was 4 years ago. I mean, maybe some of these things will, but it just hasn't.
It would be the October surprise, or in this case, the January surprise. Yeah. But Greg Pratt, is it maybe an indicator that the other candidates do view Chuy Garcia as a front runner here?
Oh, there's no doubt. All of the candidates were going after Chuy. Cam Buckner and Brandon got some good shots in.
You're talking about Brandon Johnson.
Correct. And they were going after Paul Vallis, and Paul Vallis is quietly surging. I don't know if it's super quietly, but Paul is doing very well for himself, for a guy who has struggled in the past. And so they were paying attention to Chuy because they think he's the front runner. They were paying attention to Vallis because they think he's the second front runner, and they were paying attention to the mayor because she's the mayor.
Steve Daniels, speaking of Vallis, I mean, he's one of a handful of candidates that's doing okay money-wise. There was a report in the I think both the Sun-Times and the Tribune that Lightfoot is spending twice as fast as she's raising. What does that say about her candidacy?
I think it says that she needs to get to the runoff. I mean, she needs to do what she can to get there. That means spend now and then worry later about, what she's got left, assuming she makes it. But I don't think she's got much of a choice. She's really... She's got to put negatives on Chuy and then potentially Vallis down the line. But Chuy is clearly the target right now. That takes money. That message needs to be reinforced over and over again.
And a couple other candidates that do have more than $1 million at this point. Vallis, as you mentioned, Greg, Brandon Johnson, Chuy Garcia, and Willie Wilson. Who's funding all of them, and what are their individual constituencies?
Well, Johnson has the teachers' unions and some SEIU groups. Vallis has some mostly conservative businessmen. The mayor has a variety of developers and some friends and lawyers. And Chuy has some of his political allies and the operating engineers that have a cranes ordinance that they're working on.
All right. Well, there are a few more debates to go in this cycle, including ours, which will be on February 7th, which all the candidates, I believe, have committed to. So there's going to be a lot of stuff to hash out before then. Let's move on to some other news this week. A downstate judge temporarily halts the Illinois assault weapons ban as one sheriff in the hot seat refuses to enforce the new law. Governor Pritzker answers future presidential run questions in Switzerland at the Davos Economic Forum. ComEd seeks a record rate hike as Peoples Gas and Nicor. They are also going to charge more if they get their way before the Illinois Commerce Commission. Let's start with this ruling that just came down the pike this afternoon, John Seidel. So a judge in downstate Effingham approves a temporary restraining order against the Illinois assault weapons bill. What does this mean?
Well, first of all, as I read it, it's only effective against the
plaintiffs.
There are some 800 plaintiffs in this case, so it's not just, you know, a few individuals.
It's gun shop owners,
other citizens. So there's a big group of people that it affects, but it is not, as I read the order, effective across the state. It's interesting, you know, this is the part of the process with laws like this. You know, it goes through the legislature, it's signed by the governor. Then it's tested in the courts, and that's the process that we're in now. So the case in Effingham largely dealt with the procedure through which this bill was passed. The judge, I read it briefly on my way over here because it just came down. I mean, he took issue with they saying it violated the single subject rule, violated the three readings clause. I mean, technical stuff, but therefore saying that it...
And we should mention it was brought by Tom DeVore. The Republican... Attorney General candidate who has sued Governor Pritzker on a number of things before.
He has, yeah, going back to the COVID stay-at-home orders. But I think, like, the real battle is going to be in federal court. There's been a lawsuit filed in the Southern District of Illinois saying that the assault weapons ban violates the Second Amendment. There was a Supreme Court ruling last summer that was understood to expand gun rights. And it really seemed like that lawsuit downstate was written to the Bruin decision from the Supreme Court last year. So it's going to be interesting to see how
And it certainly seems like this particular lawsuit was sent to a very friendly venue in Effingham County. So the Attorney General has vowed to appeal it right away. Yeah. Is there a chance that an appellate court would overturn this injunction and then the law is back in place?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, and that's
where we are right now until
and
we
this
start
could
to
go
get,
on forever.
It could, but we could see some of these state court cases consolidated as we did with COVID stay at home orders, as we saw with Safety Act, and then we might see some more definitive rulings at the state court. Same thing at the federal court.
And it seems likely that at some point it's going to wind up at the U.S. Supreme Court and all these lawsuits would be consolidated in some way rather than have a bunch of different ones kind of go forward and have all this stuff just kind of be done and then undone over and over again. Yeah. Let's take a listen to what Jefferson County Sheriff Jeff Bullard said about refusing to enforce the new assault weapons ban because he believes it's unconstitutional.
To answer that is because I can read the English language and I can read the Constitution.
So this is one of a group of sheriffs, Rick Tellender, that says, even before this injunction was passed down, I'm not going to enforce it. I know that it violates the Second Amendment. Do you feel comfortable that sheriffs are kind of taking the law into their own hands here?
I don't feel comfortable about any of it. And it all comes down to me, that Second Amendment. What does the word arms mean? Does it mean flamethrowers, bazookas? Does it mean handguns? You know, back when it was written, they were talking about muskets. You could fire two shots a minute if you were pretty good, maybe three, and you had to pound the thing in there. So the framers of the Constitution...
You have experience with this?
Yeah, I get out there down in Peoria, squirrel gun, you know, you put it in there, put that there wadding in there, the black powder. But it's crazy. Who knows what the next weapon might be? Do we need these? I mean, that's the question. It's always going to come back to the kind of vagueness of the Second Amendment. It's very vague. Is it for a militia? I mean, I've read it 1,000 times.
Right. There's the clause. I mean, it's a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of free state, comma, the
it's
right
like
to keep and bear arms.
It's translated from German. It's kind of backwards. It's like, what were
it's
you guys...
It's not good grammar. We know that.
No. What were you trying to say? And I wonder if they ever, in their minds, thought about the new weaponry that would come along. I'm actually surprised we still have gunpowder in guns still somewhat, you know, 200, 300, 400 years after they were invented. I thought we'd have laser things or things would make people explode. But, you know, something different. This is still just a gun that can fire so fast that it can't possibly be used for hunting. I mean, although some men might use it for hunting, but you don't shoot a deer with 40 shots. You know, I mean, I've been deer hunting, and people use long rifles.
And I think there's a legitimate case to be made that that the guns or the arms that the Second Amendment includes are ones used for recreation or for defense, and whether or not assault rifles fit into that definition. I think that's what the Maryland case is hinging on. Steve Daniels, what are the other cases that are out there tell you about the constitutionality or potential constitutionality of this law?
Well, this, like Governor Pritzker said, this is similar to some laws in other states. This is all going to the same place ultimately. The U.S. Supreme Court will decide on these, you know, AR-15s and that sort of thing, whether states can restrict or ban the sale of those things. That's where it's going. That's where Illinois will be going. In the meantime, of course, we've got all of these sheriffs and these other people who have very, very strong opinions. I mean, what is it about guns that make people so incensed? But it's, in the meantime, we've got all of this sort of skirmishing.
I mean, the Second Amendment has been interpreted by judges in so many different ways. In the past, there were judges that said it didn't enumerate an individual right to bear arms because of that clause. Obviously, in recent years with a more conservative Supreme Court, it's been different. So I think the only answer we have is we just don't know. I mean, it's just going to come down to how this gets litigated and however long that takes. Steve Daniels, People's Gas and ComEd, they are going before regulators seeking big, giant rate hikes at the same time, which is pretty unusual. Mm-hmm. How painful could this be to consumers here?
Very. These are enormous rate hikes. ComEd's is over 4 years, which is something that was authorized in the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, the green energy law that Governor Pritzker championed. They say that the money is needed to make the sort of the green future a reality, that we have to hook up solar installations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They also want very high returns on equity, which drive all of that.
Let's not forget, they just paid a $200 million fine to the federal government for their role in this bribery case.
As their ex-CEO is about to go on trial, right?
Right.
There's
a bunch
March.
Of trials about to happen.
Yeah. Right. The optics are horrible, obviously. They understand all of that, and they're trying to make the case that we're a different ComEd now. Those were other people from before, et cetera. It's a hard case to make. It wasn't that long ago that all of this transpired. On the gas side, too, these are enormous rate hikes to support rebuilding the pipe system underneath the city streets and suburban streets that may be obsolete
right,
20
gas,
or 30 years
from now. They're
spending
something like $11, $12 billion replacing all the gas lines.
Right.
And there are a lot of consumer groups that say that it's gone way over budget, and now they're going to make up for it by raising rates.
Correct, and all of that is true. And but the bigger picture is there is a push to get rid of natural gas as our main way of heating our homes for climate reasons, for carbon emission reasons, and that 20 or 30 years from now, all of this money being spent on a system that's supposed to last another 50 years will be obsolete and will need to be paid for.
We should remind viewers of the process here. The state law has it so that these companies have to go before the Illinois Commerce Commission, an unelected board, and they have to approve the rate hike. So the ComEd and People's Gas makes the case, and the ICC has to approve it. In my years, I have never seen them not approve and give ComEd and People's Gas and NICOR exactly what they wanted.
Well, they haven't had much of anything to do for 10 years because laws under Mike Madigan, which we just discussed, took away their power to regulate utilities and more or less put these rate increases on autopilot. Those laws are all expiring. Now this is J.B. Pritzker's Illinois Commerce Commission. It's really, he's the one who's going to wear the jacket for whatever they do with these various requests that are before them.
Greg Pratt, at the same time, you've got ComEd that has this franchise agreement with the city of Chicago to be the sole provider of power. It's been expired for a while. Does the mayor have any leverage to find someone else to do this, even though it's all ComEd's infrastructure?
Short answer, no. If they had the leverage, they'd be in much better shape, but they don't. There's nobody really that's out there. And so you have this dance where they more or less stop, but for a while they're like, hey, really, we want you to renegotiate. And they're like, no. And there you go.
And they're trying to get better rates for lower income folks. But that seems to have been put on hold, as you said, for a while. Let's move over to sports. The Bears' new president and CEO makes it clear that the team is leaving Soldier Field. Mayoral candidates weighed in on the possible Bears move. The Bears said the land sale is expected to finalize in the first quarter, so could that loss impact the mayoral election? And should the city pursue Soldier Field improvements even without the Bears? One more sports story. The Bulls take Paris by storm. Maybe it can turn around their season. Rick Tnder, first, the Bears introduced Kevin Warren as their new CEO. He comes from being the commissioner of the Big Ten Conference. When you listen to his comments, pretty much left no doubt that Arlington Heights is what they're pursuing.
It seems like it. And you have to ask, why not? I mean, we all love Soldier Field. The one thing I say to people is, you know, get very nostalgic about Soldier Field. First Bears game I went to was at Wrigley Field. That's where they used to play. And the Chicago Cardinals used to play at Comiskey. Anyway, modern times, in the NFL, they have the city, everybody kind of by, you know.
Whatever body part you want to say.
Yes. I won't say it.
But the fingernails.
They do, because it's a cartel. And the other cartels are like OPEC or the Zetas or, you know, the Sinaloa cartel. Those cartels, it is literally a cartel. It's been described, the NFL, as a cartel by the courts. So you can't get in, and they control this very valuable product that nobody else can really build or compete with them. And they sort of control prices. They're very careful about that, not having collusion. But if they want to say, we're building a new stadium, what can you do about it? You have no recourse except either give them what they want or say goodbye.
Well, if you're the mayor of the city of Chicago, why are you coming forth with these kind of cool-looking Soldier Field plans when the only chance you have is to say, here's the 78, here's a giant piece of land, go build your new stadium, entertainment zone.
Soldier Field's in a nice place downtown, but all the stuff about people will come, they don't come downtown on Sundays right now. I mean, they come to Soldier Field. I've been to 100 games, and they leave. There's cars, there's traffic in all directions. So what most people, the way they view the games, the NFL games, they see it on TV. Wonderful TV angles, cameras, you know, all the newfangled conventions in filming, a lot of them have come from NFL films and such. So it's a beautiful viewing experience. Where the stadium is not that important. So many other places, there's 16 teams in the NFL that, six don't have they have a region or a state in their name. The other ones, there's 10 of them that don't play in the city that they're named for.
Right.
So it's not that big a deal. Arlington Heights is not in Iowa. It's not in Indiana. It's not in Wisconsin. 326 acres. And Soldier Field has been tinkered with. It's been tinkered to death, okay?
The city blew it 20 years ago. When they were debating this for 5 years before that of what to do.
It's so terrible. You know, when a place gets removed from the national,
Register of Historic Places.
Yes. When it gets removed from that,
right.
Because people on the committee say, if we keep this on it, we have no credence at all, then you know it's ugly. And it is ugly. It's bad. You couldn't cram that thing into what remained of Soldier Field. So this is a chance to start fresh. And like I said, if the people of Arlington Heights who live out that way, John, you know, if they want it.
Do you live out there?
I live close there. Yeah.
Property values might be going up a little bit.
Oh, he's in on all that.
Well, we were talking about it. I wonder what that's going to mean for property owners around there. I think it's a very popular idea out there. But then, you know, what is going to happen to that area around there? And are people really thinking about what that's going to look
probably,
like.
Sure. Probably a diversity of opinion.
Sure. The other thing, too, is that Soldier Field can still be a very useful venue for all kinds of things. Obviously, we've got soccer, you've got concerts.
Well, who's going to pay to remodel it?
Do you need to remodel it or do all that much, right? I mean, the one thing you could do is put a roof on so you could do things in the wintertime. That may not be cost effective. But one way or another, Soldier Field's going to be used. It will still be a useful
thing. We've got to ask the mayoral candidates what they want to do with Soldier Field should the Bears leave, because they haven't been. They've just been asked about, will you keep the Bears?
Yeah. And they're all pandering on that idea, you know, because the. There's really nothing they can do. If the Bears can get the financing and they work it out, they're going to leave.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can really do about it one way or the other.
It's too good a deal for them. Before we go tonight, I want to mention a very special anniversary. This week is the 45th anniversary of this program. It's been around 45 years. Of course, 40 of those years hosted by Joel Weisman, the guy who founded this show and shepherded it for all those years. And we just try to keep Joel's legacy alive here with a lively, fun discussion about the going inside the week's events so we can give our viewers some insights. So Joel, we're trying to do you proud. Congratulations to you on this show turning 45, and we wish you and your family health and happiness right now. And I thank all of you for being here on the 45th anniversary episode of Week in Review. And we're out of time, so our thanks to John Seidel and Greg Pratt and Steve Daniels and Rick Tellender. And that is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and the Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. And be sure to join us tomorrow night at 6 for Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. And then immediately after that, Chicago Tonight Black Voices at 6:30. And then Chicago Tonight is back next week at a brand new time. Don't forget this, everybody. 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock from here on out. 10 p.m. Monday through Fridays. But Week in Review, this program will stay at 7 p.m. So this show, 7 p.m. every Friday, but there's a new 10 o'clock show now on Friday, as Monday through Thursday as well. And now for the Week in Review, I'm Paris Schutz. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a great weekend. So what do you think Warren's hiring means for the on-the-field results in the future of the organization in that respect?
He's a professional. He's got polls. It seems to be set up. Listen, they gutted everything. I mean, if you can get away with a 3-14 season, then you ought to be good. I mean, come on.
That's what I'm a season ticket holder, but I'm saying, okay, if you ask Bears fans to be patient for this, you better be
good. Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a proud sponsor of diversity, equity, and inclusion-focused free continuing legal education for lawyers throughout the region.